morning. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Director Blackman. No, I didn't see that. There are one that's trying to soak up. Okay, thank you. We have a problem with one of the links, and Nancy's trying to explain to me what to do. We'll all still panic and leave the presentation. So, can we do a call to order, please?
Governor Quinn, Secretary Schneider, Chair Wolf.
Here.
Director Bank.
Here.
Director Tanner.
Here.
Director Morris.
Here.
Director Prado.
Here.
Director Saldana.
Here.
Director Towns.
Here.
Director Wisner.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you very much. I'm going to start with a report from the Inspector General. Christie, I believe you're going to introduce this for us.
I am, and I'm also would like to just take a moment to introduce Liz Luby. Liz is our new acting general counsel, is filling in for Tom Bamonte. She's worked for the tollway for how long, Liz?
Almost 13 years.
So, knows her stuff by this point, and it's been doing a great job filling in. So, thank you very much. I just wanted to make sure you could pick Liz out of the crowd. I haven't been so good at introducing her before meetings, at all the board committee meetings, so I wanted to make sure I did that. And then also wanted to introduce Lou Bertuca, who's our new Deputy Chief of Staff, is joining us. I've worked with Lou before. He's a great addition to the team, and I'm thrilled to have him. And also, let me see, is there anybody else? Sharon, have we introduced you before? No, Sharon Ferguson is our new deputy. She's assisting John Donato in procurement, and she's recently started. So, Sharon Ferguson. So, as many of you know by statute, the Inspector General is required to report twice a year on the activities of his office. We've been working closely with him, certainly since he started in his role, and even before he started officially as the Inspector General. And I think that his report today will be enlightening. He's been doing a lot of work. We've been working closely with him in his office to make sure that we're, you know, holding the tollway accountable for the resources that we're here to protect, and are frankly happy that we've been able to work so closely with him to uncover what we think has been, you know, some problems that have existed for some time here that are now coming to light and we're dealing with. So I won't steal Jim Wagner's thunder, but we'll let him give his own report. He's been doing a lot of good work here and is a good partner for us on making sure that we're being accountable for what we're doing. So, Jim, without further ado.
Thank you. Good morning. As you see, I do have this morning a PowerPoint. Hopefully, I'll be able to do it the way it's supposed to. If it doesn't, maybe I can get some help on that. As Christy pointed out, and I think most of you also already know, the statute that created this office requires a report to be issued to the governor, the board, and to the General Assembly every 6 months, the end of March and the end of September. So, while we're a day early, it was appropriate for me to give this report to the board today. And it'll be mailed off to the legislature and the governor as well. I have a lot of things to talk about, but I'm going to try not to take up a lot of your time. So I'm going to be summarizing quite a bit.
It worked.
And simply summarizing the requirement to provide the information by the end of September comes from the statute. And it describes what the summaries will contain. And I believe the board members have a copy of the report this morning to look at as we talk. One thing that I wanted to move on to mention to you is that our current staff is made up of just the people listed here. Our senior investigator is Dan Haxton. We have an investigator auditor, that's Sue Lewis. She started February 1st of this year. We have a Deputy Inspector General, that's Ann Montgomery, who started in April of this year, and the Administrative Assistant, Lois O'Keefe, has been at the tollway for, I think, since the beginning of what was considered to be the Inspector General Office created by resolution of the board in about 2005. I wanted to go over the requirement as far as the cases that we are to report that resulted in discipline. There were several this year, starting with case 0010. This was the type of case that became one that we looked at in several different instances during this six-month period. It dealt with an unusual amount of emergency vehicle transactions for this particular collector. Emergency vehicle transactions are supposed to be utilized when you have a emblazoned emergency vehicle coming through the man lane, which would be either a police car or a fire department vehicle or perhaps an ambulance, but emblazoned. In those instances, they give them a free pass, and they then mark down on what is called an unusual occurrence report, a UOR, that they had that type of vehicle pass through, and that's acceptable. Unfortunately, what seemed to happen with this one and others, there were numerous occasions where the collector was utilizing that EV button, emergency vehicle button, when it was not an emergency vehicle and was collecting cash at the same time. This particular toll collector admitted stealing approximately $7,000 in the past 7 years. He resigned and was charged with a felony by the Cook County State's Attorney and eventually pled guilty to a misdemeanor charge. And he did make restitution of the $7,000.
Can I ask a question?
Certainly.
So aren't the plates, you don't take a picture of the plates when there's an emergency vehicle, or is it going too fast? I mean, how do we...
This is at the booth itself.
Oh, it's not through the open
So road. I think one of the things that, as Jim has continued to do his work, some of the cases first started as referrals from toll audit, which was seeing this activity, and I think, you know, working closely with Jim to identify what types of activities they should be looking for. So now, as we've identified more and more cases along these lines, I know that the Inspector General's office and management are going to be working together to see if there are additional checks and balances. We've already identified some that we should be putting in place, but additional checks and balances that we should put in place for any type of, whether it be the emergency vehicle button or, you know, others where there's not a registration of a toll paid at those cash gates. We take photographs of people in the open.
So the emergency vehicles don't go through the open road?
Well, but then that would be, there wouldn't be a stolen toll in those cases.
Yeah,
they would
but
either
I'm
not be registered. They would either not be they would either, you know, a photograph
yeah,
would be taken at the
I'm
open lane.
I'm trying to figure out why an emergency vehicle would go through the cash instead of through the open road toll. I guess.
They're not in an emergency situation or
one example, Director, would be our officers sometimes go to some of our squad rooms. They would have to go through a manual lane to make a turn to go in a squad room if it was at a plaza. That's one of many possible examples.
Or if there's an exit that's close by after a plaza and it's more
also it's
safer.
It's police departments from other cities and that too, correct?
Yes,
so it's not just our police.
Our own police.
Yeah, it's like if a Naperville police officer came on and got off, I think they're allowed to go through free.
Are they always allowed to go through free, or unless they're flashing their light?
The rule as written currently, if they're in an emblazoned vehicle, it is allowed to pass.
Okay.
If it's a marked car.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
That's a good question.
A very good question, and the majority of the marked cars, ambulances, fire departments, do go through the open road tolling lane and not the manned lanes. We're talking here about manned lanes with the collectors in the booths. 05, case 05 refers to an employee benefits case. where one of our employees failed to notify appropriately, at least timely, of a divorce, which resulted in the tollway paying out unnecessary insurance claims for a period of time. The employee agreed to reimburse the tollway for those benefits. It was $696.64. A notice has been sent out to employees to remind them of the responsibility they have to change their forms when their status changes.
Jim?
Yes?
How, for example, would something like that come to your attention or the attention of the office?
The employee benefits department here at the tollway brought it to our attention. This was one of about 8 or 9 different situations where employees, for various reasons, had not changed forms. This was one of the more serious as far as the amount of benefits that had been paid out or claims. Many of the others where they didn't notify of a divorce, the person still did not utilize the insurance. They didn't send claims in and probably knew they shouldn't. 12 is referring also to misconduct of a collector, again, with the emergency vehicle transactions. This particular collector has been dismissed. He did not resign, but he has been dismissed by the tollway. And the Cook County State's Attorney has now issued an indictment for the theft and official misconduct. 13 is another of the situations. This is a 10-year employee who was also dismissed by the tollway, has admitted taking money from patrons and classifying it as an emergency vehicle, and also giving free passes. 14, we're talking another emergency vehicle transaction case. There were, in this situation, the collector did submit some UORs to mitigate the total amount. The other cases, there weren't any UORs submitted at all. But in this case, I believe that we found there were 11. And so from the total amount, we deducted that on the case and gave them credit for the 11. But there still were 762 other occasions where this individual utilized the emergency vehicle transaction. This person has also been indicted and terminated, felony charges are pending. 03 refers to a tollway laborer who initially was investigated by our office for misuse of the employee transponder, the non-revenue transponder. And we had found that it had been misused and not consistent with travel to and from the job, a total of $627. That was reported on to administration, and then it was determined that there was a belief that the laborer had been working on a second job while on duty at the tollway job. And we did an investigation and did find that not only did he conduct outside employment during normal work hours, financially benefiting from that, he used his cell phone to set up those jobs and allowed non-employees to use tollway property, permitting them to park their vehicles on tollway property. Further, he used a tollway vehicle for his personal business. The employee was dismissed by the tollway for that activity.
Excuse me. In a case like that, are there financial recoupment that the tollway should be getting in your view?
There was approximately $1,107 that the person had been found to have misused the non-revenue IPAS system. That was listed, and I believe administration has been trying to recover that money. Whether that person will reimburse is still up in the air.
I'm wondering if he was taking a salary from us and doing a job at the same time.
Yes,
and the
income was a personal business provided not by someone else, by his own business. That he is generating work on tollway property in time for his own business that he had started. It would be a taxable situation as far as the dual income. It's all been reported. I don't know if there will be any process further against him.
Okay, thank you.
We're up to 14.
We do turn some of these over to the local state's attorney, don't we, for prosecution?
Yes. The ones that I've mentioned where they've been indicted, we have discussed all of these with the appropriate county state's attorney's office. The majority of these cases have been in Cook County, but we've also had cases out in DeKalb County. We will approach whichever county is pertinent and turn over the information. O3, we just spoke about. 31 is another employee benefits department case that was turned over to us. This involved a employee who was actually having a nephew covered under insurance as if it were her son. That's not permitted as far as the insurance coverage, but no attempt was made to verify the relationship with the employee and the individual. It resulted in a substantial amount of insurance benefits being paid for that child over quite a number of years. The employee did agree to reimburse $6,320.06, but I can also tell you that benefits were paid out around $250,000 for this child. So it was a very expensive error.
And this was over the a period of?
Probably about 18 years, actually. The child needed had special needs all of his life. 27, another of the EV cases with regard to the summer temporary employees that have been hired to help out with the collections. And in this case, it was determined in about a 5-week period, because they didn't start working until the end of June or the beginning of July. And this particular collector started July 5th. Up until August 16th, had a shortage of $520. So there were a lot of problems with the collector appropriately collecting the right amounts. When confronted, she resigned and paid back the money. Moving on to cases that we looked at to provide any recommendations, we did have in case number 15, a Rutan question with regard to the video supervisor position. There was a question with regard to the interviews. There had been a list provided as far as recommendations by one of the interviewers, making up his favorite list of people that were interviewed. While CMS guidelines do not strictly prohibit that, it's not the best practice, because there can be the appearance of impropriety in providing instruction to the other interviewers. And in fact, one of the other interviewers did admit that he was influenced by the list. And so as a result of looking at this case, we found that they really didn't violate the Rutan rules, but there was the appearance of impropriety in the way that the process was done. They followed the Rutan rules and did the interviews appropriately. It was the creation of that list.
You might,
go ahead.
So the list was there's what, several people do the interviews? I'm confused.
Usually three in a Rutan.
So it was one of those three people said, here's my favorites.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
It wasn't a list from somebody higher up in the organization.
No, it was one of the three interviewers, and they had not had an opportunity to meet to discuss the results of all of their interviews, and therefore he made up his favorites list, and that did have an influence. So one of our recommendations, and we submitted several, but the interviews should be scheduled in a way to allow timely scoring of the candidates, preferably immediately after each candidate, so that you remove the possibility of this being done at a later time. We also believe it would be essential for the Rutan qualified people here at the tollway to receive training if they haven't had any retraining for a five-year period. And there are many who have been Rutan trained but have not done any interviews for quite a number of years and haven't had any retraining. A lot of that depends on the availability of training classes and sessions through CMS.
I think we need to just explain the Rutan is the name of a person who was part of the case about political hiring and promotion, right? Maybe you can just give us sort of, I don't know, somebody can give everybody 2 seconds on that, just so, could we all use it as shorthand, but I think it'd be useful for everybody to understand.
It's a state of Illinois Supreme Court case. Rutan was the name of one of the employees. There were 5 employees, if I remember correctly, in that case, but Rutan was the first listed versus the Republican Party of Illinois. It was a 1990 Supreme Court decision, and basically, in a shorthand version, said that politics should not come into play when interviews are being conducted, employees are being considered for certain positions. Further clarification has been provided over the years by various government governors' directives as far as how this should be applied and how the interviews should be conducted, and that information is published in a booklet by CMS to provide guidance in how to do those types of interviews. Not all positions in any agency are Rutan positions. And technically, in most instances, CMS will determine whether or not a position is Rutan qualified or eligible.
Now, so when we say Rutan exempt, that means that they're not a form of civil service. Rutan would be a form of civil service?
No. You could use that phraseology.
No.
No.
Go ahead.
There's a distinction between civil service or the personnel code and the Rutan case, just two different bodies. When we say Rutan exempt, we mean that it is not covered under that U.S. Supreme
that court
case.
Okay.
In fact,
right.
I believe that the plaintiffs in Rutan were not civil service, and their concern was that they were, whether you want to call them political or policy or exempt positions, but they were being treated differently because of their political party, if I remember the case correctly. So there may have been one or two who were civil service, but it was a combination of the two categories.
Okay. The other case on the Rutan question is 25. That dealt with seasonal employees, and the tollway had operated under the previous definition of these employees as being exempt. CMS currently considers them to be covered by Rutan. The investigation that we did determined that the interviews were conducted appropriately, even though they were not considered to be Rutan covered. They were done as Rutan investigations and interviews. The recommendation that we had in this particular case is simply the form that we have been utilizing here should be documented in a paper format from Human Resources. They should have written procedures for all of the functions so that there's no question in the future. The process has developed over the years with the utilization of memos from various times and emails from various times, and a complete manual should be prepared. And if I'm not misspeaking, I believe that's in process.
Yes.
So, 11, policy questions on missing assets. We have a process here to check all of the assets of the tollway through the barcode or the M number, and they're all labeled, and periodically every year our personnel, property control personnel, verify the existence of whatever has been barcoded or M-numbered throughout all of the 117 locations Mr. Menda, is that close?
I believe so.
So our property control people have to go out and physically inspect and check off and list those. The process that we were checking on is the missing assets. There's a process in place where if an item, whatever it might have been, has not been on the list as being noted and found for a five-year period, it can be written off and removed from the form. We wanted to make sure that there was a correct process in place for removing items from that property control form, and there is. A department chief has to sign off on the disposal. Finance is in part of the chain as far as the value. Most of the items that eventually are written off after a five-year period have little or no value. They have been used up, so to speak. But one of the things that we did put in the recommendation is that they need more people. There is one person, and then there were two assistants to try to get all of this work done at the vast number of locations, and they actually need assistance to conduct this annual audit. They should be required to keep their paperwork for 5 years. I think they were keeping it for two or three. And I would recommend that the chief internal auditor review the process to make certain that there is no mishandling of any of the property of the tollway. That's something that could be considered. The other inquiry, number 32, was our attempt to look at this whole process with regard to the toll collectors and to try to determine from interviewing the managers of the system as to how they oversee the individual collectors at the man plazas. We interviewed six plaza supervisors, all of whom had people that we had found as far as the toll collectors to have been involved in misapplying the emergency vehicle button. We also talked to the managers above them, the district supervisors, and the general manager. Our basic view is that there had not been sufficient oversight by the managers of the toll collectors for a number of reasons, and our recommendations included the manual should be updated. They all have a toll collector manual. It has been a compilation of different memos over the years. It needs to be updated, and they need to sign off that they have received a complete copy and they understand all of the rules and restrictions in there. Each collector, I think, needs additional training with regard to the utilization of the computer keypad to make sure that they know that when any of the buttons in the system are being utilized, a record is being made, and they're going to be held accountable for that record. I think the plaza managers could benefit from additional management training. Many of them expressed the belief that they were too busy with other clerical issues to daily manage what's happening in the booths, even though they're responsible for the money that's coming into each of the plazas. They didn't think they had additional time. The computer survey that we had the toll audit team put together that gave us the information that we utilized to bring in these people to talk to them, it's now possible for the tollway to do a lot more of that type of computer survey that was not possible until about 2008. Our system has been improved and it should be further utilized. The system can print out the emergency vehicle transactions, the utilization of unpaid toll transactions, and several other possible ways that a toll collector could hit the button and take cash that they shouldn't. Those surveys should be done on a regular basis, weekly, And I think then the district supervisors should meet with the plaza supervisors weekly or monthly to discuss the results that they've printed out.
May I just ask one question about this emergency vehicle?
Yes.
What's your guess about how long it has been going on? Or what evidence do we have of the longest period? I assume the $7,000 person was doing it for a long, long time.
Well, he admitted to having been doing it for 7 years, and he was taking responsibility for $1,000 a year. The computer information that we do have available goes back to 2006. I can say definitively it's been happening since that time. The tollway did not have that type of computer access to be able to confirm that prior to that. But it's certainly not a recent phenomenon.
Thank you.
If I might, Jeff?
Yes.
Is it possible to let the toll collectors know that there's a new sheriff in town? That this board was that serious when they asked for the inspector general? Now we have paperwork to show the inspector general does catch people?
Yes.
And when they get caught, they lose their jobs and they might go to jail and get convicted? And there is a new sheriff in town. You've been doing that all along with just one badge and one horse.
Right.
And you now have some support to do that. And I think the vast majority of employees are good, honest people and are working their tails off to do good. But we need, as part of the training, to inform them, not these individual names, that's
yes.
private, but that they probably will get caught.
Right.
And they're going to ruin their lives over $500.
Right. Well, we've just recently put out more documentation and memos to let them know that there is a new sheriff in town, and we are taking these things very seriously. I think it's important not just to do that. That is very important, but it's also important to strengthen our protocols.
Mm-hmm.
To be able to get weekly, and if not daily, reports on usage of the emergency vehicle button is going to be able to have us react in real time to them using these buttons. So if we get a red flag that says somebody used that button, then we can call that district supervisor or that plaza manager and say, hey, where's that unusual occurrence report? Why hasn't that been filled out? And then look into it then, as opposed to waiting several months.
It does accumulate.
Yes, it's very important that we have real-time information on this so we can ensure that we strengthen our protocol and make sure they're doing exactly what they're supposed to be doing. And not taking money from an agency that's paying them very well to collect toll revenues.
So I assume you've been through the process of thinking through what are the other possible ways that fraud can occur in the plaza?
Yes, yes.
And I choose to pay cash in order to talk to our collectors and figure out what's going on with them. I have a question. Does the arm automatically go up and down?
It does not. They have to validate that. So when you go through a toll plaza, depending on the type of vehicle you have, they will validate that vehicle based on the number of axles that you have. So if you're towing a boat or you're pulling a trailer, that's why you need the toll collector in the booth, because we have a post validation system.
Or if you have an iPad?
Or if you have an iPad to validate it through iPad.
So it is possible that person goes through, the arm is up, I pay, the arm is still up, and goes through, and the toll collector can pocket my payment?
Typically, the arm comes down. The arm will come down after each transaction, so it doesn't stay up long enough.
That was my experience recently. I'm just curious what other mechanisms there. I assume you've gone through this process.
Well, if you've gone through and the arm has remained up during that whole transaction, which would be an anomaly, because if you're paying them, they should have to take receipt of your payment or whether you're using the iPass and have to validate that on their system.
We don't have to talk about this specifically. I guess I want to make sure that somebody with a felonious mind has thought about what are all the possible variations within the toll booth.
Well, I don't want to say they brought me in because of my felonious mind, but because I have experience in law enforcement, and it causes me to take a different approach to looking at you know, the collection of tolls, and I'm very serious about that. So I tend to look at it from a different perspective, as I imagine Jim Wagner does as well. So we are
a better way to characterize it.
Yes.
A strong law enforcement bank.
Yes. So we are looking at it from a number of different angles, and as we become aware of, you know, the weaknesses in our system, we're doing everything we can to make to strengthen those weaknesses.
And what committee does this go to?
The hanging committee.
The question of the operation of the, is it administration? Must be administration.
It would be, well, operation of the, which component of this?
But not the IG, that comes to us, but I'm thinking more about how do we.
To the extent that there are policies and procedures that are changed, it would be administration, and that would be the finance and administration operations committee.
Okay. Sorry, thank you.
And along that line, I would just add that whenever you have cash transactions, either in a bank or in a grocery store or anywhere, you have to trust the people but verify the amount. And I think that our verification system leaves some gaps, as in the past, and that's what we're trying to address and make sure that we verify the amount collected is appropriate. I want to just finish up really quickly. This gives you the totals during the 6-month period of cases that we've addressed. But